Out of the black of the western sky comes the big old smoking mothership that is Coast to Coast AM. Good evening to you. John B. Wells in the Saturday night chair, your electromagnetic nightlife impresario. As we carry on part two of the Zombie Jombie weekend, it was nice to be on with you last night, sitting in for George Norrie, where we had our Ramajama Friday night. Yes. Revolutionary Alternative Media Assault. Now, what does the JAMA stand for? John and my audience. Could be John and his audience, but that would be Ramajaha, and that's not really the sound I was looking for. Anyway, good to be with you. Tonight is a program we believe that you will enjoy. I'll tell you. We're going to talk with Amber Lyon. Yes, you've heard me mention her a couple of times. Remember the, we were paid to run certain stories. We were paid not to run certain stories. Yes, it is she, intrepid warrior journalist. First time guest, too. And while we get ready for her to come on, a couple of websites for you. AmberLyonLive.com, AmberLyonLive.com. L-I-V-E, AmberLyonLive.com. She's a three-time Emmy Award-winning author, journalist, filmmaker, and photographer, obsessed. Yes, I'm using the O word, obsessed with hackers, human and animal rights, and revolutions. And she's the founder of the investigative news site, Muckraker.com. And we're going to talk about the investigative journalism. You know, you've seen those old movies like, I'm a reporter, see? I got to get the story right, see? And according to the movies, the editor would be like, well, you better be right about this because... And the reporter was an intrepid investigator also. Remember that Humphrey Bogart picture? Where the bad guy says, right at the end of it, he says, I can't remember the picture, the name of the picture, but he says, what's that? What's that noise? What's that noise? He goes, that's the sound of the press, sweetheart, and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, as long as we have an internet, there's nothing they can do about it. Falling all over themselves for that kill switch. Falling all over themselves to make sure the NDAA stays in place. And as we were picking on Senator Feinstein last night over her obsession with defining what a journalist is, exactly. And if you don't fall within that definition, well, you don't get any First Amendment rights. I challenge anybody to come up with anything as stupid and totally unconstitutional as that. And I know there are some people out there going, Mr. Wells, I like your show and I like Coast to Coast AM, but I do not like your opinions. Well, maybe I can change your mind. And if I can't, hopefully your finger's not broke. All right, broken. All right. This stuff is just all over the place. It's crazy. It's wild. Photographs of bunches of tanks in New Orleans. On the Huey P. Long Bridge, over the Mississippi River in Jefferson Parish. All kinds of tanks, tan tanks and green tanks. And delay Obamacare or we will shut down the government. John Boehner makes his move. Nancy's absent for the vote. Senate will reject. And as I mentioned last night, a funny thing happened the last time that the government shut down. A very funny thing happened. Nothing. Nothing happened. They make it sound like, and aided and abetted by mainstream media, they make it sound like, oh, if the government shuts down, whatever will we do? Well, we'll go on living our lives. And trust me, the operation won't skip a beat. There will be some people furloughed for a few days. But none of the essential services, military, police, you know, air traffic controllers, stuff like that, they're not going anywhere. So don't be swayed. And that is why... journalists like Amber Lyon and the people we had on last night. That's why they're so important. They are the tip of the spear because if they're not in business, if they're not pursuing what they pursue, if they're not doing what they do, well, then you just take what mainstream media hands you and it's not good for you. All right. I'll drop in a few little news points as we go through the night, but I'm anxious to get Amber Lyon on the air with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome and stand by. Here it comes. You know, it was like a call out into the abyss Amber, where are you? And she said, I'm right here, and welcome to the program. I am just delighted we were able to get together on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, John. It's an honor to be here.
You know, I was looking around at your websites and Amber Lyon Live, and also I went over to Muckraker, and there's a dizzying picture of New York. I think it's New York. And then went on down the rabbit hole, and it's like, gee, you're really pushing a few buttons and ringing a few bells out there. It's like one guy was writing, I admire her spirit, but I question her, whatever, you know, the veracity of her statements. And then you posted a link at a couple of hours ago or something, said, here, click on this, and then you'll see. And it was all about the Hastings situation, which is really alarming, mm-hmm. particularly when we saw that second piece of video. With, oh, that's the primary explosion. Whoa, there goes the gas tank. Wow, there's the main charge. So I don't feel like letting it go. Michael Hastings was on this program back in February, and we were all stunned when that happened to him. I suspect that he was about to let something out about the, what I felt from the beginning was some sort of a botched arms deal, which resulted in that Benghazi attack. But I don't know, jury's still out, but that's what I think. And now I'm starting to see, yes, it was an arms deal. And then something else about 400 surface-to-air missiles being stolen and all kinds of stuff. So just, I will shut up now. Tell us about you and what led you to this work.
Well, I've just always been really passionate about standing up for the little guy and making sure that I'm able to give a voice to the voiceless and use my skills for that. And so I think, John, I've always been a journalist, maybe never, not officially when I was younger, but I've always really had a passion for standing up for the little guy and eventually worked my way up the ladder and made my way in to CNN, where I was an investigative journalist and documentary film producer for them. And I worked for CNN for a couple years as an investigative producer. And now I'm independent and starting an investigative news online website, which is in the process of being built. So if you head to muckraker.com now, you'll just see our landing page, and we're hoping to launch fairly soon.
Well, I signed up for the newsletter immediately, of course.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Now, you know, the thing that really got my attention, I don't, it's like I've got so many screens up, I can't remember which screen I have up half the time. There's one big one in the middle, and it's surrounded. It looks like the director's booth at some TV production, and that's what the inside of my head looks like. But what really got my attention was, did she just make the assertion that we were paid to run certain stories, and we were paid to not run certain stories? Where CNN was concerned, is that correct, or is that too radical and not correct?
Well, what happened at CNN, we were overseas producing a documentary on Bahrain, and we went to great lengths to get that documentary on air. Just for a little bit of background, Bahrain is a U.S. ally country. It's in a very strategic location across the Strait of Hormuz from Iran for any escalating conflict going on in Syria and in the region. So the United States really wants to keep that naval base there. And in order to do so, they've been brokering with this regime that has been committing horrific acts of human rights abuse against protesters in the country. And what we did with this documentary is we were able to grab footage to show the brutality of this regime and bring that footage back to the U.S. and play it on air. And we produced an hour-long documentary on the topic, and it never aired on CNN International. And that was really a shock for my crew and myself, and also for other people working within CNN, other senior producers. Even an executive had written me and said that he was surprised it never aired. And what we found out after research that was in plain sight was that while at one end of the building we were investigating the Bahrain regime and trying to expose these horrific human rights abuses, at the other end of the building, CNN was taking money from Bahrain in order to produce really rosy content, actually taking money directly from the Bahrain regime. And so I do believe there was a correlation between money CNN was receiving from Bahrain and the fact that our documentary never aired on CNN International, and the fact that it became nearly impossible to get Bahrain stories on air. And that also translates to other countries as well. I mean, CNN's been taking money from Lebanon, Kazakhstan, and Bahrain, as we found out. And journalistically, that you're not supposed to take money from people you're trying to expose. That's more public relations than journalism. And so I think what the revelation of this story had for a lot of people in the public, John, is just something that they'd already known, and that the mainstream media is censoring news and taking money from these regimes and reporting in a pro-U.S. style that is feeding the public a wrong image of what's going on in the world.
You know, this is pretty strange because I would think that if you took money from a government to not run a story, not only have you just been bribed, but you've also just opened the door to be blackmailed as well. You better keep covering it up, or we'll let it out that you already took money for covering it up. I mean, that just seems like a really stupid thing to do. I mean, was there no way out of it? Was it like, take the dough or you're done? Or was it just like, hey, thanks, appreciate it, we won't run it?
I think what CNN was doing is they were just making extra money. And so what they would do is take money from these regimes and these governmental organizations and air hour-long programming that made those regimes look, that shine a favorable light on them. And so, for instance, one of them was CNN iList Bahrain, and it covered Bahrain as being a progressive country, a happy business country. The crown prince was a reformer. One of the reporters was live at the racetrack talking about the Formula One race. So these governments were paying them, and some still are paying them for this favorable content. In other words, instead of doing journalism, CNN in these cases is doing public relations for them. So I believe from my own experience that it was just a way that the network is making money. Just as they would take money from any advertiser, they're also taking money from these governments.
Good grief. Well, so let me ask you this. Did you get a chance to get to know Mr. Turner at all?
I did not, unfortunately. He wasn't there when I was at CNN. So I did not get to know him. I could have had some interesting conversations with him, that's for sure, if we were ever able to sit down. But that wasn't the case when I was there.
Yeah, I remember when the CNN first came online, it was he was out there on the set talking about fresh news. It's going to be fresh news. I'm like, oh, boy. It's almost like a terrier sitting at the top of the steps looking at the front door, and somebody comes up the window and goes, and the dog looks up like, oh, this isn't good. And now the latest thing that he's asserted is that men should be banned from politics for the next 100 years. And I thought, yeah, Ted, get him. Well, now, we didn't get a chance to get to know each other at all over the phone, because I know you're on the job at a location not to be disclosed. And I understand that among your interests are human and animal trafficking. Now, we know about the human trafficking. There's, good grief, there's prostitution and the proverbial white slavery, and then there's just the undocumented immigrants across the border, and they go through the tortures of the damned in many cases. But let me ask about animal trafficking first. What animals are being trafficked, and who's doing the trafficking?
Well, I've done some documentaries on animals being trafficked out of Central America into the United States, parrots, monkeys, and other animals, and just in the ways that the trafficking was able to succeed, in the way the cartels and other criminal organizations were able to succeed in this trafficking. That was a small portion of my trafficking reporting. The larger portion definitely revolved around human trafficking of underage adolescent girls throughout the United States. I mean, trafficking could be as simple as keeping a girl in a Motel 6, you know, as a pimp locking a girl in a Motel 6 and forcing her to sleep with dozens of guys in one sitting. And I spent a lot of time on in street corners across the U.S. covering this unfortunate topic in an unfortunate way that our youth and our most vulnerable girls are being enslaved, and it's present day slavery. And most people think, John, that this is happening when they hear trafficking to girls from other countries who are being brought here, and that's just not the case. These are, I spoke to one girl as young as 11 years old who was being sold out of a Motel 6 on the website Backpage.com by her pimp and forced to see 10, sometimes 15 clients a day at age 11.
Oh, my
and
God.
And this is happening. Yeah, it was really unbelievable. When I first got into that, I was on the covering that for about 5 years. And when I first started, I just had no idea what I was getting into. But, like I said, I found a girl as young as 11 years old, and you would think that the John or client would recognize the age discrepancy. But unfortunately, a lot of them aren't thinking with their correct head, and they are engaging in these behaviors that are just disturbing.
Well, you know what Robin Williams said about that. Man's got enough blood to run either that thing or his brain, but not both at the same time. And I think he's correct.
I would say he is, after what I witnessed covering child sex trafficking across the United States.
Yeah.
You know, one time, John, I was at a John school, excuse the name, and that's where these men were brought who had been caught buying women online. And they weren't necessarily there because they were caught buying underage girls. But I was able to stand before this class of about 100 men, and several of the men in the group admitted to me, actually on camera, that they had suspected some of the girls that they had met up with were 13, 14, 15 years old. And I asked them, well, did you think to call the police or cancel the meeting? And they, all of them, followed through with having sex with these underage girls. And these were married men and men who were otherwise normal functionally in society. And so it was pretty amazing. I think it goes back to your last statement, John, proving the veracity of that for sure.
You know, this is a sensitive subject, and I don't mean to ask any questions that could be deemed insensitive. But if a girl that young, 11 years old or 12 or 13 or 15 or really any age, are having relations with that many men. I mean, it would be bad enough if it was one a day, 4 days a week. But what's the timeline? What's the expectation for their ability to remain in this profession? I would think that this would be an unbelievable health risk.
Yeah, of course. And unfortunately, most of these girls were abused and they're sexually abused as young children. So this has just become a way of life for them, and for many of them, it's one of the only things they know, and it also makes them very vulnerable to these traffickers. And they end up staying, and a lot of them who I met who were then 18 had started in the business at 11, 12, 13 years old, and so they end up staying in the business until maybe they are rescued or have a near-death experience and really decide that it's time to get out or if they're arrested. But they end up staying in the business sometimes for decades.
Decades. All right, well, I hear the music, which means that our local news and some commercials are being staged and the outer doors are being opened. When we come back, maybe you can bring us up to speed on... Are they sold by their parents? Are they kidnapped? Or is any of it voluntary? Or is it all of the above? And then we'll talk about hackers and investigative journalism, because I know this hour is going to go by real fast. Amber Lyon, our first-time guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. What a pleasure it is to have you here. We'll be right back. And I dedicate that song to Amber Lyon. One of her documentaries is called Selling the Girl Next Door, and another one, Into the Wild, Animal Trafficking in Costa Rica. One of her websites is amberlyonlive.com. That's Amber, L-Y-O-N, live.com. And the up-and-comer is muckraker.com. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Amber Lyon, the reason that I dedicated that song to you is because it's entitled Sister Change, She Won't Wait for You. And so there you go. That's the first dedication I've ever made on this program. You know, there are so many people. I'm sorry. Say that again. I stepped on you.
I appreciate it. Thank you for dedicating this song to me.
Oh, okay, cool. You know, we have to accommodate for all manner of skeptics and cynics. So when, do you suffer from this, you must have a hidden agenda? Kind of a thing. It's like, what are your politics really? I mean, it's pretty clear from your website what your attitude toward the NDAA is, for example. So when the skeptics come at you and they question the veracity of your journalistic initiatives, do you just keep going? Do you just ignore them? Is that is it like don't pay any attention to the critics? Don't even ignore them. Just keep going. That's pretty much been my set.
Yeah, I always just have to say you can't please everyone, and people are. My main goal is to get people talking about important issues, whether they agree with me or not, or whether they question my motives or not. I just can never let that bother me, or I could never move forward, if that makes sense. I've always taken on taboo topics in my career. I've never been scared to tackle stories that most journalists won't touch with a 10-foot pole. And with that comes a lot of criticism or fear, I think, as well. And I think I'm so passionate about what I do that it baffles some people, and they may question motives, or it's just unusual for them. I think in many cases to see individuals give up their lives for their passion. And take great risks for them. And I think sometimes it's shocking for some people, or it just opens yourself up to criticism, I guess. But John, I just can't waste time. You know, I'm sitting in a hotel room now surrounded by a backpack I've been living out of for the last 6 months as I've been doing this intensive research for this next project I'm working on. And, you know, I just don't have time to entertain the critics, if that makes sense.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, I thought as much. I just wanted to hear you say it. And what do you make of mainstream media today? I'm thinking that it's a dinosaur and over with. It's not even mind candy. It's more like mind anesthetic. And you don't really get any news from it. I mean, you don't get anything you can really use. It's I don't know. You talk about a hidden agenda. It just seems like just keep going. It's not meant to be good. It's just meant to be bought.
And the majority of really passionate muckraking journalists have left. They've had to leave. Only the people pleasers, the yes men, are the people who are still there. I highly believe one of the main reasons I was let go from CNN was because I'm definitely not a yes kind of reporter. I go with the truth versus what someone else may believe the truth is. And I think that I agree with Seymour Hersh, who Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. You know, he wrote a great piece in The Guardian saying that 90% of editors in the mainstream media should be fired. They should just clear out these bureaus at ABC, CNN, NBC if they want to survive. And I highly agree with that. I remember thinking many times that CNN needs to get rid of almost this entire Washington, D.C. bureau because the majority of the producers and reporters there are in bed with government officials that they're supposed to be critical of. And more journalists need to be outsiders, and they don't need to be in bed with people they're supposed to be investigating. And that's the problem. The mainstream media is so interconnected with government officials and with the powerful and the elite that the only way it will survive is to just gut these bureaus and these networks and start over and hire passionate journalists, which will probably won't happen. So what gives me hope, John, is that now we do have the power of the internet, and we can get the true story out to the public, and we don't need these gatekeepers anymore.
You know, it's interesting. In the Bill of Rights, we have freedom of the press, and we have a separation of church and state. It seems to me that it should have been separation of press and state. I think they missed it on that one. But
yeah,
I guess freedom of the press will have to do for now. Now, back to this human trafficking thing. Is a dent being made in this, or... I mean, is there any stopping it? I take it there's an insatiable demand for particularly, you know, underage, certainly young women. And I'm sure there's a pretty good sized percentage of people who are seeking underage girls. Is a dent being made in this, or is it just, you know, you can monitor it and you can report on it and you can bring awareness to it, but you're not stopping it?
Unfortunately, there hasn't been a dent made in it. It's only increased, according to some studies. It's hard to measure because these girls are mostly being held out of sight, out of mind, and run-down highway-side motel rooms. But unfortunately, the internet, while it's been amazing for interconnectivity and for the press and awareness, it's also made it really easy for pimps to sell underage girls on these online classified sites. And now the pimps can sit in their apartments, which some I've spoken to do, and play video games all day and just keep a laptop open on the table, and they can be selling five or six girls at once on these classified sites. And it's so easy now that we're even seeing an evolution of the pimp from being a male streetwalker to one pimp I found in St. Louis was a mother of a three-year-old girl. And she just didn't want to work during the day, so instead of getting a job, she was pimping out underage girls from her living room on these classified sites. So the internet has made it a lot easier. It's taken the trade off of the streets and onto the web and made it easier for pimps to get away with it. And unfortunately, it's made it so easy that we're even seeing pimps switch from selling drugs, which, you know, you sell a joint of marijuana, your profit's done once that joint enters the customer's hands. But with these underage girls, and even girls who are of age who are being trafficked, they can sell them over and over and over and get a continual income. And some of these pimps are making more than $100,000 a year. So the internet's definitely increasing the trade. And unfortunately, law enforcement hasn't been able to get a handle on it. Neither has the media to expose it, and neither has our government to help provide enough resources for these victims.
You know, you would think the NSA would be all over it, and it would be Fed City. But I suppose that's a low priority in the ongoing war on terrorism, you know?
Yeah, instead they're monitoring journalists and probably yourself, John. They're keeping track of what we're doing instead of the real criminals here. And that's a travesty.
What do you make of this thing with Michael Hastings?
Well, you know, unfortunately, right now we live in a time where not a lot of things are black and white. I have to go now journalistically with what's probable. And Michael had written a note, and I have to say as well, personally, I did know Michael, and he was extremely respected within the investigative journalist community as being a true muckraker, a fearless journalist who was not scared to take on the powerful, as so many of these mainstream journalists. While the mainstream journalists are in bed with the powerful, Michael was actually out there on the road doing the right thing and investigating. And so we may never know black and white what exactly happened, but let's look at what's probable. It is probable that Michael was murdered. Michael wrote a note that day saying, the day he died, saying that he was worried he was being followed, he was working on a big story, and also he had confided in a friend that he was worried about his car being tampered with. And then that night, he dies in a violent, explosive death. I mean, you have to look at the probability, and it is probable that Michael, who did have, who was a muckraking reporter and did have enemies, was murdered. And I do personally believe that it's probable he was murdered, and it is most likely he was murdered.
And I wonder if it was to, I wonder if it was because of what happened to McChrystal, because of his story that was released through Rolling Stone, or the upcoming one that had to do with the CIA, or maybe a collateral benefit to the perpetrators might have been an attempt to send a message to other muckrakers. Doesn't seem to be working very well.
Yeah, he. I mean, it did within the community. It really sent a gasp through the community when he died. And I would say the majority of muckraking reporters who have smart heads on their shoulders who can look, put two and two together, will tell you that they believe Michael was murdered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a little bit too convenient. The timing is very damning, not to mention the content of his work. So we're not going to let it go. And there was another a man who was part of the 9/11 truth movement, wrote a book called The Big Bamboozle, and another one called Lakefront Airport. He was involved with Barry Seals and all that, not running guns, but running ammunition between the U.S. and the Contras in Nicaragua. Of course, Barry Seals got taken out. Mm-hmm. And then Philip Marshall. And it's made to look like, it was a murder-suicide, his 14-year-old daughter, 17-year-old son, even the family pet dog, and then himself. And nobody I've spoken with who knew Philip, including myself. I used to talk with him on the phone, not frequently, but often. There was not a hint that he would ever do anything like this. And he's gone too. So after Michael was blown up like that, I just had to come on the air and say, well, that's two.
Yeah.
And I just really wonder where all this is heading. It's really kind of depressing. You get the idea that, you know, if we bring the truth forward, the people will respond, and therein will be our protection. But sometimes I really feel like we're on our own.
And it's tough too right now. It's a trying time for journalism as well. When you look at what's happened to Michael Hastings, also, I don't know. Are you familiar with Barrett Brown?
No, who? I missed the name.
Barrett Brown.
Vaguely, but I can't bring you up to speed on it. And us.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine, and he was jailed a year ago, and jailed essentially for posting a link in a chat room to some leaked documents.
Yes.
And now as I speak, this man is locked in a cage, and essentially it's because he's a muckraker, and the elite wanted to come after him and silence him, because Barrett is a genius at uncovering documents and being able to, what happens when these leaks come through is there's so much information that it could take the average person years to go through these documents and uncover the important nuggets. And Barrett was such a genius that he's able to go through these documents and pull out what the public needed to know when it comes to private security contractors and the surveillance state and the U.S. government. And he was able to analyze these documents and really break some amazing stories. And that's why I believe that he's sitting in a cage right now, facing nearly a century in prison for what the FBI says was posting a link in a chat room. And if you look at the way, I mean, Barrett is a journalist, and he is, there are murderers and rapists who are out on the loose in the U.S., and said this journalist is sitting right now in a prison cell. And when you, as another journalist, when you look at that situation, you look at Hastings' situation, and all the intimidation that's going on against Glenn Greenwald right now because of the NSA documents, you really realize that it is a trying time for investigative journalists in the U.S. right now.
Yeah,
they're
Barrett Brown.
He's the messengers, not the criminals.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, he's just 32 years old, and now I know who you're talking about. He's a Dallas kid, and he was He sort of renounced any affiliation with Anonymous, but for a while he was at least represented as a spokesman for Anonymous.
And Barrett saw Anonymous. I think he was enamored with it at first because he saw it as the one force that could compete against the U.S. government and all this secrecy. Because they are, Anonymous is this collective of anonymous individuals who, some, not all, have hacking capabilities and are able to get in and release these documents that prove that the U.S. government has been lying to us for decades. And Barrett saw it as a force to be reckoned with. And that's what drew him to Anonymous and drew him to cover Anonymous. But I think what really got him sent to prison was his ability to analyze these leaks and connect the dots and then deliver to the public, you know, let the public know what was going on when it came to the government's shoddy relationships with these private security contractors and these surveillance contractors.
This is really, really strange. And I'm glad you brought him up. January of this year, a third indictment was filed against him on two counts of obstruction. And anyway, he got hit in, as of this month, he's under a federal court-issued gag order. He and his lawyers are not allowed to talk to the media at all, lest it taint a jury. And he's been in custody for a year. It's completely insane. And let's see what... He left his computer linked to a thing called Tiny Chat, in which the raid could be heard in the background, and a judge ruled that he would be denied bail because he was a danger to the safety of the community and a risk of flight.
Anyone that knows Barrett knows he is not a danger to the community. And, you know, Barrett is in a cage right now because the government wanted to shut him up.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, you know, it kind of makes places like, you know, the middle of nowhere Asia look really good sometimes, because you want to get out there and you want to do your thing and you want to spread the truth and you think that's what you're supposed to do and so forth. But when you see some of the things that are happening to our brothers and sisters on the quest for exposing these perpetrators, all these things that are happening to us, not only individually, but as a society, it just makes you go, well, I certainly hope I have protection of the Great One, because I've got a feeling I'm going to need it. You know?
Exactly. I agree with that philosophy as well. It's become difficult to do our jobs as journalists or to do what you do, John, just speak out against what's happening. But it's something that everyone, I think, needs to step up and do. We all have a duty to try to improve the future and use what skills we have to expose these injustices and try to set this country on a more positive course. And so it's an obligation to stand up. And if everyone stands up, they can't go after everyone, you know?
Well, that's right.
And so that's a beautiful thing I saw with Syria and the country really standing up and finally, you know, the majority of the population fighting back and saying, no way in hell are we going to allow this to happen. And we need that when it comes to the surveillance state. We need that when it comes to the attacks on journalists. And, you know, if we can have that unity, we are a force to be reckoned with.
Indeed. I know you could only spend an hour with us tonight because you've got a shoot in the morning, but I hope you will come back soon keep us in your loop, and we'll keep the awareness of you and what you're doing high, and maybe that'll be a deterrent to anyone who would stand between you and what you're trying to do.
Well, thanks, John, so much, and I've been doing some amazing research now on our nation's mental health epidemic and prescription drug addiction nightmare and solutions. And when I am done with all these shoots and back in the States, I'll definitely come back on to share some of the knowledge I found with you. It's pretty fascinating and gives me a lot of hope.
Thank you very much. I look forward to it. Amber Lyon, amberlyonlive.com, and soon to come muckraker.com. Sign up for the newsletter. We'll be back with William B. Scott, his new book, The Permit on Coast to Coast AM.